Feels like tonight's a night we're probably going to remember for a long, long time. This sets up for a beautiful evening of couching. We've got Game 6 of the Cup Final, and we've got the Monday Nighter of all Monday Nighters, Kansas City, Baltimore. Nice of the NHL to make sure they sidestep the biggest game of the NFL season. But not much you can do about that.
Now, Brian, that's Tampa's fault, because they should have wrapped it up on Saturday night, don't you think?
Well, I mean, Dallas is allowed to grind too, right? I thought Dallas would get one of them, you know, and, and for a back-to-back, both of them to go into overtime is, I guess, thoroughly entertaining. I mean, that's what it was. It was a couple of fun games, right? It's been a fun cup final.
There was a time, I don't know what part of the game it was, I can't remember, like the third period or the first overtime, it was like Dallas was saying, just win it, go ahead, win it. They were just dominating, and then all of a sudden Dallas wins it, and you're like, here we go. And now you're thinking, I always think the worst. I think it just takes me back to the time as a player. Now if I'm Tampa, I'm thinking, God, if these guys win this next game, then we're in trouble now. And they got momentum, and they're going to be probably favored to win game seven. So you got to get it done tonight, man, because you don't want to, I don't know, you don't want to give them any more than what they already got. They hung on. They won that game. Corey Perry with a big goal. You're just thinking, God, we got to get rid of these guys, like, now. And what happens if Sagan and Ben heat up? Then you're in big trouble.
I thought Sagan started to a little bit, you know, over the weekend. I thought he's coming alive a bit. Yeah. And, Tampa's been clearly better, right?
Yes.
They have clearly been better. And they deserve to be up 3-2. But Corey Perry has been one of these stories of the playoffs, where this is a guy who, you know, he's out. Was he bought out in Anaheim?
Yeah, he was bought out in Anaheim, right? Yeah, they signed him for $1 million.
Yeah, Dallas gets him on the cheap, and it's like, I don't know if he can skate anymore. I don't know if he can play anymore. And it's a perfect example of, in the regular season, you had no idea he was still in the league. No idea that Corey Perry was still playing. But when it comes to playoff time, that's the kind of guy you want on your team, because he knows how to win. He plays tough. He pisses off the opposition. He's the kind of guy, if you're on the opposing team, you're like, I can't believe we have to play this guy somewhere between 4 and 7 times over the next 2 weeks. Yeah. Like, I just don't want to see him that many times.
And you're I guarantee you he'll turn that into, if he wants, I mean, he's getting up there in age. If he wants, somebody's watching this thinking, okay, we got to get this guy on our team if we're going to make a run. He'll probably turn it into 1 or 2 years, I guarantee it.
Yeah, I think he'll go back to Dallas, I would think. Feels comfortable there. I'll bet you this run, the camaraderie in that room probably goes a long way. You would think, being in a bubble for a couple of months and getting all the way to a cup final, and maybe they win it. But I'm with you, O. I think 2 years is probably sitting on the table, and maybe a couple of million a year. You know, I think he's going to get more money too.
Here's the thing. Just looking at his contract, it was 1.5 that he was making this year, just base salary from Dallas. But he has a bunch of games played, bonuses, and then qualifying for the playoff. He's got another 1.75 in bonuses if they end up winning, because a Stanley Cup bonus of 150 grand, and he's got a playoff bonus of 100 grand, and you got to win 3 rounds. Like, it's crazy. But he's got 250,000 each of the following levels: games 10, 20, 30, 40, and 50 games. So it adds up pretty quick. So he signed on the cheap. It's going to cost him, you know, when it's all said and done, $3 million. But when you're looking
to pay it.
Exactly.
Ribbage. Of course. Yep.
And here's the thing. I always bring everything back to Toronto. And the Spezza signing seemed to be the same type of signing, the Corey Perry. You know, Spezza's a great guy, great leader. Maybe the skills have diminished a little bit in the regular season. But I kept thinking, like, the playoffs, if the Leafs end up going deep, you know, maybe Spez is a guy who's a difference maker. And that's, I'm sure Kyle has to be taking a look at some of the performing players in the playoffs. And it's not just your core talent. It's who you shape your group around that with. And you may be able to find a few diamonds in the rough, like Corey Perry. Now Pavelski's not a diamond in the rough. They paid $7 million for him, and he's got 13 goals. So he's been as advertised for the Dallas Stars in the playoffs. He only had 14 in the regular season. But, you know, Jim Neal, I mean, I don't know if he thought his team was going to make it to the final, but those players that he signed has certainly helped.
Yeah, oh, for sure, man. I mean, keeping Hudobin around and reacquiring Jamie Oleksiak. I think Oleksiak's played pretty well, you know, and like, just little tiny deals that kind of add up. And it happens every year. In every league, every sport, you know, like with the Lakers, they're doing it right now. Danny Green, I guess that worked out pretty well, You know, a couple of signings here and there, Rondo, a couple other guys. You're like, that'll work. Blue Jays, you can say, I mean, Ryu is much more than just chipping away. He's not a guy you just plug in on the cheap. But any team that's going to do anything, they're going to look back on it and say, of course our star players had to factor in naturally, but there's always two or three guys who didn't get a ton of vine, didn't get a ton of play or talk when they got signed or when they got acquired, and they chip in and they exceed expectations, right?
Yeah.
And the same thing's applying with Tampa. And I still think Tampa, clearly, they're in the driver's seat. I think they win tonight.
Yeah.
But you're right, if they don't, man, it's coin flip for a cup final.
It is. It's cup final, game seven is a coin flip. You're a bad goaltender and, or a bad power play. That's how I always want. We got drubbed
penalty.
In the final. Yeah, bad penalty. We got drubbed in the finals. We talked about Sagan or Ben or somebody heating up. I always look back at that and say, like, I had some good years where I had hot streaks. Like, you know, four points, three games in a row or something like that. I was just thinking, why couldn't that happen again? So it's an awful feeling to walk away saying there's only three possible games left?
Two possible games.
Why couldn't I just get on a heater for two games? Like, why couldn't that be me? So that's what they're all kind of dealing with mentally right now. Someone's just got to – if someone steps up and has an awesome two games, you win the Stanley Cup. Or for Tampa, it's one game. You need one guy to have a night. Braden Point, Kucherov, Hedman, the goaltender. That's what you're talking about right now, individual performances that turns into a championship.
And what about – I mean, I don't know if you saw Corey Perry get that – they got that giant chain with the medallion on it or whatever, and they handed it to him after the game. And he said, guys, we got six periods left, maybe more. Let's make this count. Like, that's all it is. Like, if these end in regulation, it's a maximum of six periods, minimum of three. And like, that's what's left in the season. So you know it's going to be, you know, balls to the wall, for lack of better words,
for everyone.
Like, it's going to be.
Is
unreal.
Corey Perry's
hockey.
Wife the only one allowed in the bubble, or what was that?
I don't know.
It just seems like you just see one wife in the crowd.
She's the new Braden Holtby's mom. Remember Braden Holtby, that first year he went on a run? His mom was on TV more than anybody.
And
it's the same thing with Corey Perry's wife now. She's on TV every second show.
I think she's the only wife in the bubble.
I don't know how that happened. She was in Ontario. I think she was in Ontario or somewhere, or in BC, and just was able to drive up. I think she was in BC or in Alberta.
I think they live in Ontario. I think they live still down in London, I believe. But
You know what it was? It was the other guy, Dowling, the defenseman, who's from Alberta, and his wife and kid drove up. But you're right. Like, when they're in Canada, they can travel. So that's I think there's only a handful of, like, family in the bubble, which is kind of
– And that might make sense. It was like Drew Brees last night, right? Like, his wife and kids, whenever they had a moment to show them – they show them. They must have showed them five times last night. You know, there's Drew Brees and his wife. We're like, we know. We got it. That's cool. I mean, I understand we don't get fans in the stands. So I'm all for it a couple times. I don't know if you need it 15 different times over the course of the game. But I just think it's more – it's probably the guys in the truck that are like, we have had nobody in this building for so long.
Exactly.
The like, second someone the gets in there, we're showing them. I don't blame them for that.
I got to be honest, though. I don't know how you felt about this, but I think there were some people that snuck in there. Like, not snuck in, but it was like maybe the doctor's wife. And like, there was, I can't remember what game it was. They panned the stands during a field goal. And I was like, there's some people just sitting in the end zone. And I wonder if that's family members
it,
or whatever.
I don't think you could do it with
I was
the
watching the
page. Testing.
It wasn't, they weren't illegally there. I guarantee you they were there because they were part of a family or part of something, but nobody went to them. I watched a field goal with the Patriots, and there were some people sitting in the stands, and I was like, who are those people? Like, it wasn't fans. They had to have been related to the team, but you have to wonder if there's an assistant coach that could bring in his kids, or, you know, some form, or, you know, a practice guy is able to bring his wife or kid in or something.
Well, they were saying on NBC last night that I thought Tirico said 750 people can be in the building. I thought that's what they said. So if you have the two teams that are going to make up, you know, let's say $150 combined, maybe 200. Let's round up to 200.
Right.
That allows 500, 550 other people. There'd have to be security in there. There's going to be media in there. That's going to take up whatever amount of people. And then I guess beyond that, they're going to stretch it all the way to the limits and kind of as almost like a test dummy scenario. Like, let's get people in. Let's bring them in different entrances, get them out different exits, see how this is working and see where it's going. Wow. Because I kind of sense that the majority of NFL stadiums are planning on having fans as we get further into the season, right? Like, there's already some that are having fans. And I think by the end of the year, short of maybe the New York teams, maybe the California teams, I think almost everyone's going to have some sort of capacity.
Florida will be ready to go. Florida will just
Florida's already got people in.
Yeah, they're not shy.
Miami, Jacksonville, Tampa, they already got fans.
Flood the bars, flood everything. Well, get it fired up in Florida. They love it.
I just feel like if you're – say you know the owner. Say you know Bobby Kraft, and Bobby Kraft is like, yeah, I can get you into the building. You know, you're going to have to sit away, and you have to be screened and all of that. Like, would you accept that type of – like, would you go knowing that nobody was there and you could just sit?
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
I would actually go. Yeah,
of course I would.
And sit by myself in the corner in the outside. Like, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah.
I just, I swear I noticed people there. Now, maybe I'm out to lunch, but it was the first thing I picked up when I was watching a field goal. I'm sure
might have been
a
cardboard cutout. Maybe you're losing your mind over their noodles. Everyone's,
I don't know.
Everyone's got cardboard cutouts, and as we've gone on here, they just get better and better.
Yeah, that's true. Could have been a cutout.
Maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. But, like, there's the cardboard cutouts down in Buffalo, and I guess the Blue Jays are never going to play there ever again. Although they had a good run there, right? Well,
yeah.
I shouldn't say that. I mean, who knows what's going to happen next year. Our numbers are up to 700 in Ontario today.
Yeah.
And people are starting to really get anxious, and understandably so. Who knows where we're going to be come next spring. I would assume the Blue Jays will be back home by next year, but at this point, assuming anything in 2020, that's a loser's race, as our friend Pat Quinn might say.
What did you mean when you said they're never going back to Buffalo again?
Well, they're not. They're done. Like, they're down in Tampa. They're at the Trop for these three games, and then if
they
move on.
So is every game's at the Trop?
The three games of this wild card round are at the Trop, and then if they get on and they get into the DS, then they go out to California.
Oh, okay.
And they're either in San Diego or L.A. It hasn't been decided yet. And then if they get all the way to the World Series, they'll be in Texas. So they're not back in Buffalo again. And I got to believe the Major League team will never return. I hope it never returns because I hope they're back in Toronto next year.
Never say never right now, buddy.
That's the whole point. But there was speculation all weekend. And because they were so tight-lipped, you could almost tell that the team was overthinking it and something was going on. And this is just blatantly analytics, and I don't understand what it is, but clearly this is coming from a top. Ryu is not going to start tomorrow night.
You're being serious?
I am being serious.
They pushed him to game two. Yeah, isn't that
Shoemaker
crazy?
Is going tomorrow, and Ryu is going two, and Taiwan Walker will go three. So the explanation, I guess, from Montoya, although you just know he didn't make this decision. This is why you have a difficult time suggesting that Charlie Montoyo should be getting manager of the year votes. I don't believe for a second he made the call.
No,
there's no way he made this
series,
call.
How do you not go with your heater, number one? I have no, you can't tell me one stat or any kind of thinking like that is going to tell me differently. Like, you can tell me some bozo stat that I don't understand and try to explain it. A three-game series, you've got to try to get number one.
Yeah.
Give me a break. That is redonkulous.
That's what it is, and you know they're going to have one. I mean, I think their formula here is that on an extra day's rest, Ryu is, I guess, statistically better. I mean, let's not forget, guys, he went seven innings the last time he was out.
He's
I mean, he did go seven innings, so maybe Ryu called it in and said, don't even think about it, Charlie. I need an extra day, dude.
Every extra inning, I need an extra day. That's what it basically said.
But this is going to get destroyed. If Shoemaker is a gas can tomorrow and they get blown out in game one, it is going to get just apocalyptic in Toronto. Like, people are going to go crazy. And Taiwan Walker's numbers have been pretty good. I like his attitude on the mound. Like, I feel like he is the type of pitcher in the playoffs that you want on the mound as well. I would have Shoemaker game three. You know, I don't even like that. I would go Ryu 1, Walker 2, Shoemaker if you need to in game three. I don't trust Matt Shoemaker over Taiwan Walker. Man, this is a gamble, and it's an analytical gamble that I don't know if they're going to be able to explain it. I'm sure they will at some point or try to. But this is overthinking it. This is just pumping numbers out and coming up with something that makes you feel so smart when for the last 120 years in pro ball, your ace goes game one. It's
seven
just
game series,
simple.
You could maybe talk me into something with days off in between and rest, and you're still going to get them out there possibly two to three times. A three-game series that are what, three days in a row?
Yeah, 3 days in a row.
Sorry.
You got to get
sorry,
to game
guys.
Three, right? You got to get
sorry.
To game three. So,
like, I love how you
I have
it
to
a...
think it's Ryu because they went up to him and said, "Do you want the extra day?" And he said, "Yes, please," or
maybe.
Something.
No,
I cannot see a competitive guy. Like it's just you got to win game one. That's their only chance against they're outmatched against Tampa. You got to get game one and take your chances in the next
right.
two.
Yeah,
it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Tampa could almost go with any rotation, and I could make sense of it. Snell, Glasnow, Charlie Morton. You know, it's like Houston in years past. If last year you told me Verlander's going one, Cole's going two, or vice
That's
versa,
okay.
I'd be like, all right,
right,
whatever. There was such a massive drop-off from Ryu to Walker to Shoemaker.
Yeah,
it's not even, like, remotely close.
Yeah.
Ryu is so clearly your number one.
Yeah.
So
it's Brian
clearly.
Hayes in the one chair and Joe from the bridge in the two.
It's a drop-off.
It
like
is.
It's a catastrophic drop-off. It's not Verlander or Cole where you're like, I don't care who's out there.
No,
we're money.
There's no time. There's no time. You got to put – I just can't believe it. I heard it in the broadcast, them talking about it. Oh, they're not sure about it. But I didn't actually think that they would go through with it. Maybe there's something in baseball I'm completely not aware of. There's some magic formula, but I'm not buying it. There's nothing you can tell me about this.
Well, you called it a bozo stat, didn't you?
Some kind of bozo stat that I'm not aware of. There's three games. How hard is it? You got to win two. That's the only stat I care about.
Okay, I'll sit back and listen as somebody explains it to us. As far
somebody give me something, and I'll try to digest it and buy into it.
But yeah,
Hayes, can you give me one thing? Can you give me something?
The only thing I can think of, and I'd have to look up the stats, like if he is so much better after a day's rest, but he's great every time he goes out. What's the difference between going out every fifth day or on the sixth day? I mean, it's not like Ryu's numbers are imploding when he goes out through a regular rest. So maybe there's something wrong with him. Like he was really sore over the weekend for whatever reason, and they feel like they can stretch it out, and giving him an extra day will get him, you know, focused and get him prepared, and they'll get their best stuff in game. You have to play game one and game two. You know, to be fair to them, you have to play both games, and Rio's only going to pitch in one. So if that's the explanation, then just come out and be honest. I mean, that's what I'd like to hear from them. Charlie Montoya, I'm reading some quotes because he's speaking now. He's like, yeah, we got to be creative. What the hell does that mean? Like, if you feel like he needs an extra day rest, say it. You know, just be honest. There's no point in holding that back. But if it's because you think you figured out some magical combination here that you've pumped into a computer system and it spat out Shoemaker into Ryu into Walker, then you just have no pulse for anything. And you're asking for trouble here, you know. Like they're putting themselves in a really strange, maybe modern, progressive position. But I find it hard to believe Charlie Montoya came up with this on his own. He'd been a baseball lifer. He'd been around the game for 30 years. I'll bet you he's never seen an ace pitch game two when he was prepared to pitch game one. I'd be shocked if he's ever seen it and he could ever reference it. And I'd be surprised if he personally feels like this is the move that absolutely should happen.
To me, it smells like part of the hire to begin with, Brian. It's not a big high-profile guy. And they basically said, we like you. You've got a great energy. But with what we say, it happens. You're not making player personnel decisions. We do it from the top. And you're going to nod your head and say, yes, okay.
Yeah.
Because Madden, you think Madden would go for this? Like, come on.
Well,
no way.
What if it was Tanner Roark? Like, what if it was like they're like, hey, we're going to start Roark? Like,
well, clearly there's be absolutely no explanation for that.
Wouldn't watch.
It would be impossible.
What if Charlie was like, you know what? I got a hunch here. Like, this guy's a battler. Like, I'm going to start him. Like, if you want to be creative and act crazy, there's your creative craziness.
Well, and maybe they look at Shoemaker, maybe his history, and I'd have to look it up, suggests that he is lights out, and if you put him out there, he's going to give you a shot to win. I don't know. I mean, the truth is, it is a massive mismatch between what Tampa's going to throw out there and two of the three starters the Jays are going to throw out. Even if Ryu pitches tomorrow, it's basically a wash with Blake Snell. Right?
Yeah,
like Snell,
you gave this guy $80 million to win the game he won on Friday night and to go out and win game one of a series. That's why a guy makes $80 million.
Yeah.
I don't
end
know.
Of story.
I just don't – for. To me, I think you always go with your best in game one to try and get ahead in the series, regardless of analytics, regardless of anything.
Course.
The only thing, Hayes, you brought up a great point. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Like, this guy could be sore. He could be under the weather. There could be so many different factors that they go, we need another day for him to be healthy. I don't know. But
I'm surprised Shoemaker's going one. I mean, I thought they were lining it up. Ryu game one, Walker two, Shoemaker three. So it's not only the fact that Ryu gets pushed back to two, it's that Shoemaker is going to be the guy that starts for you in game one. And he's looked fine. You know, he's had injury problems over the past couple of years, as we know. But he's back. He's at 100% as far as we know. And listen, it was going to be a mismatch whenever he gets on a mound, like I said. Whoever he's going up against on Tampa, one for one, starter for starter, they're in the hole. You know, they're underdogs. Same thing with Taijuan Walker being out there. But this is unconventional. This, I believe, is overthinking it. This might be Shapiro and Atkins saying, we're finally in the dance, and now we got to prove we're involved here, you know, and we're going to get involved, and this has been our plan. And I don't know. I'd like an explanation. And we'll see what Charlie Montoyo has to say. We'll try to get the audio, and we'll play it for you. But Ryu going game two, that again, a week ago – would have been shocking, but over the weekend it was picking up steam. You know, they wouldn't commit to him starting game one. So I can't necessarily say I'm that surprised, because they had kind of been laying down the framework for this maneuvering based on their lack of transparency over the weekend.
Yeah, there
so
you go.
I guess we'll see. But Scotty Mitchell tweeting out just a moment ago, our Jays reporter, two factors definitely play in a Blue Jays decision to use Shoemaker in game one. One, he's better against left-handed hitting compared to right-handed hitting, and he's pitched pretty well against Tampa in three starts this year. He's got a 3.60 ERA. They're hitting 192 against him. Okay. So, but again, that is just simply looking at the stats and analytics and taking all of the human factor out of the game. And I wonder how the clubhouse is going to react. Like, if you're Bichette and Biggio and Vladdy and, you know –
yeah.
Gritchick,
et cetera. People.
Yeah, and you're sitting there, you're like, wait a minute, guys. I've been watching baseball. I've been around the parks forever. You're telling me Ryu's not going one? You're telling me you're going to overthink it and try to get so creative, and you're going to explain to me that the numbers indicate he should go game two? How does that work?
Well, I don't care if Shoemaker threw a no-hitter last Wednesday. He's still not pitching the first game.
Here's the other thing that we should factor in. What if Ryu's pissed about it? Like, what if he's like, hold on a second here. I'm the guy. I go game one.
I think, like, if he stepped in and said, give me the ball game one, even with all of the focus on analytics, which this team is fully committed to, and they're not alone. I mean, every team in baseball does it. Every team in sports. I would think he's got the cachet to say, I'm taking the mound. I think there's a very good chance he was sore. I mean, it really has to be the explanation that Ryu really felt like if you give him an extra day, it's going to allow him to maybe go a little bit longer into the game. You know, instead of getting maybe five innings out of him, you can get into the seventh. That's the only thing I can think of, is that Ryu is the X factor here.
We paint this guy with a picture like that. Six is – I'm done at six. I'm on the highway at six. Like, maybe he is just the grittiest, like, wants to be in there, but they won't let him. But we're painting him with a picture that he's like, you know what? I went seven last game. You got to add another day. Like, that's it. I'm not doing it.
Maybe. Like, I mean, listen, I guess the wheels are in motion now. He's going in game two. So Matt Shoemaker will start tomorrow.
And
Ryu goes game two, and if it gets to a game three, Taijuan Walker will take the mound. So, you know, short leash for likely all three guys, certainly Shoemaker and Walker. And that's another thing. Like, if Shoemaker's going to be a kind of a tight leash option, are you going to blow out your bullpen in game one when you potentially have to play three games in a row? Three games in 3 days, and your bullpen's depleted a bit anyway? They've had rest now over the past couple of days. But it's a strategy. And we'll see. I mean, they're underdogs. They're saying the right things. Bo Bichette, you know, oozing confidence, saying they're not intimidated whatsoever by Tampa. And I believe it from him. I believe it from a number of guys on the team. But, you know, talk is talk. Let's see if they can walk the walk starting tomorrow night.
Yeah, and if somebody has a reasonable, like something that Brian can read on air, that'll make me go, okay, I can buy into that. At Hayes TSN, send him a tweet, because I would just love to hear something that just makes me feel comfortable about this.
Yep.
Because as I'm looking at it, it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It's dumbest.
It is bucking the trends that have been around for, again, 120 years. So maybe you're so much smarter than everyone else, Shapiro and Atkins and, you know, who's ever doing whatever they're doing behind the scenes, are smarter than every other person in the history of the ball game.
Yeah. You know what the other thing that pisses me off? Like, these guys are underdogs, man. They're not supposed to beat Tampa. If you're the best team in the league, maybe you can screw around and try something cute and funny. These guys are underdogs. No one's picking them to win the series. They're probably not. So just go for it. Try to win game one.
But here's
it's
the
so
thing.
It's so dumb. It's dumb.
But maybe their gamble pays off.
Well, clearly, if it does, they're going to be patting themselves on the back.
Exactly. If we're talking two games, if they end up winning in two games, you're like, hey, they chose the right path here.
Well, I mean, if Shoemaker wins tomorrow, or they just win, I mean, it doesn't mean he needs to register the win. It doesn't matter how you get it. If you win game one, then all of a sudden, that might be the explanation, is they have thought about this, and you know they've taken every single possible angle into account. And they said, if we can find a way to win game one, whatever that means, if that means going to the bullpen in the second inning, it means going to the bullpen in the second inning. Find a way to win, and then we go into game two, and Rio is fresh and on the mound. That's going to really favor our chances here. You know, again, I would suggest that's overthinking it. I'm going Rio game one every single day of the week, and I don't think I'm alone. I think the three of us see it that way. I'll bet you large majority of fans would see it the same way. But, listen, that's why you play the games. We'll find out starting tomorrow afternoon. Game six of the Cup Final tonight, the Monday Nighter, just to beat all Monday Nighters tonight. You got the Ravens at home against the Chiefs, Baltimore -3.5 at home. So we'll tee that up. We'll get into it later this afternoon. Big rumors in the NHL, Jack Eichel, Patrick Laine. There's some things starting to cook. Yeah. In the background there. I love it. And
I thought Bobby Mack was retired. What's going on?
Yeah, we'll come back and tell you what Bob McKenzie's up to these days. And guess who's back in the NBA Finals? I don't think it surprises anybody. We'll touch on that as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so the Blue Jays rotation has been publicized. They're going with Shoemaker tomorrow in game one, Ryu in game two, and if it gets to a game three, Taijuan Walker will take the mound for the Blue Jays in game three. So this goes against conventional wisdom, you know, the generally speaking, for about 120 years, whoever your best pitcher is, if he's available and rested, he goes game one. Now, Ryu, as we know, he went seven innings on Thursday night. Okay, first time all year.
Yeah.
Not like
exhausted.
He blew out, you know, his arm or anything like that, threw 135 pitches, but still. And statistically, with an extra day's rest, he is that much better. But I guess the explanation from the Jays, and we'll play this in just a second, is they're trying to be creative. Their bullpen is rested, so they feel like they're going to use it a lot tomorrow. And then Ryu hopefully can give them seven innings so they don't have to rely on it in game two, give or take. And, you know, I guess if it's there for game three, if they need it, then the bullpen is prepared again. So here's what Montoya had to say just moments ago. And this is the biggest story, clearly, when it comes to the Blue Jays, because everyone else is more or less ready to go. We know what they're going to look like. They're going down to Tampa. They're in Tampa right now. They're working out right now. Game one tomorrow, game two Wednesday, game three if it gets there Thursday. Here's what Charlie Montoya had to say about Ryu starting game two of this series.
You know, in a three-game series, you know, the goal is to win two of them, you know. So putting our ace in the middle makes sense to us for several reasons. So plus our bullpen is fully rested. And, you know, we said we were going to be creative from the beginning. And that's one of the reasons how we got here, being creative. And to be one of the best teams in baseball, we're going to have to be creative. Also, you know, when you look at their starters, they all got the extra days off because they clinched before we did. So because we couldn't clinch as soon as they did, we're also giving our A's an extra day off. So we're actually doing the same thing they're doing, you know, except, you know, our A's pitching in the second game.
Okay. So they're trying to be overly creative because they claim they've been creative all year. So
not him. I guess it wasn't referring to him, by the way. Creative is not, it's above his head because he knows that Ryu should be starting. So somebody else was creative, not
he's
him.
He's an extension.
He doesn't believe in that philosophy. I guarantee you.
But how many times did we watch Gibby kind of?
Well, Gibby would fight though. If Gibby was still here, Ryu's starting tomorrow. Unless again, if Ryu has gone to them and said, "Guys, it would be more optimal for me to get the second game. Gives me an extra day." Then they're all diplomats. The managers will listen. If you're a superstar, if you're the ace, you have a say in things, and that could be the case. And from that standpoint, the logic of likely going to the bullpen early tomorrow. Let's not forget, Shoemaker has made one start since mid-August. You know, he returned, and he gave them three innings of decent stuff. You know, like he's fresh and he's healthy, but it's not like he's built up his arm. I don't know what he's going to bring tomorrow. He may only give them two or three innings, and they're going to the bullpen. That's likely going to be the plan anyway. And I guarantee you he's not going more than two times through the rotation. There's no chance. So they know they're using their bullpen tomorrow. And if you give them an extra day and they feel like Ryu can get through seven, you know, they're trying to map it out before it happens, and I think they'll likely be committed to the plan. They've been doing that all year. You know, they can call it creativity. I think it's basically they have a plan and they stick to it. I don't think they are ultimately creative. They might be creative before the game with the lineup, you know, hitting Biggio eighth, DHing Joe Panic at times, you know, stuff like that might be considered creative if you want to define it that way. I don't know how creative they get in game. I think they commit to a game plan and they go with it. You know, when you have no starters going into the seventh inning at any point this year, how is that creative? Like, that's committed to a plan, and it's worked for them. They're in the playoffs.
Yeah, you're
like
right.
That's, say it, like, if that's how you describe it, guys, we've done this all year. We have had confidence in our plan. This is our plan. We all collectively came to a conclusion. We're going with it. Okay. You made the playoffs. You're in.
Right.
I may not agree with it, but I can understand it if you phrase it that way. Don't claim that you're just winging it here and we're Joe Creatives over here. And, you know, hey, we just got a pulse on things. This isn't pulse. This is analytically driven,
calculated
game plan that you're going to commit to and you're going with it. And you've mapped out how you see it playing out. And clearly they think it's their best possibility to win a game.
That's them coaching up Charlie and saying, go out there and say that that's what we're doing.
Maybe. Yeah,
because honestly, where I was going with the Gibby thing is there were times where I felt like Gibby was flat out just saying what was told to him and he was supposed to convey that to the media and the fans. Because there was times there were times I know that he disagreed with what was going on, but he was like, all right, you know,
I'm
whatever you want
paid,
me to do,
getting
paid.
This is the gig. And
I feel that's the same scenario here. This is a calculated group. They're not just winging it, going, hey, we're going to, you know, gut feeling here, go with this. This is, I agree, Hayes. Like, I think they've crunched the numbers. They feel this is the best scenario to give them an opportunity to win this series. Have at it.
Let's see it. Hope they're right. I think everyone in Toronto and throughout the country is hoping that and understanding that they're underdogs, that they're up against, you know, a 1-2-3 that may be unparalleled in all of baseball. Tampa's just lights out the rotation. So, you know, we'll see. And it starts tomorrow. Game 6 of the Cup Final tonight. If the Cup is won tonight, do you think there will be a trade, at least one deal, before we're on the air tomorrow in the NHL? Like, how quickly are things going to happen here?
I think tomorrow we talk about a trade. No kidding.
I could see a big trade tomorrow. Like, I could see something that's kind of done, and it's like, you know, Matheson for Hornqvist isn't going to quite take the shine off the Cup Final, but this monster would not please Jerry and the boys.
I was getting crazy today, guys. I don't know, because when Bobby Mack tweets out stuff, I was like, there's smoke and fire with that. You know, he doesn't randomly come out of, what is he, hibernation, do you call it? What has he been doing?
Semi-retirement hibernation.
Right. And go, yeah, there's a little smoke going on here. All I could think about is what would that deal look like if Eichel was going to the Rangers? Like, what? Like, I was like, okay, does it start with Zibanejad because you'd need a centerman back?
Well, does wouldn't it, start... it be like, look, you can have the first overall pick coming up, and you can take the guy we took second last year, and there's your trade. Maybe throw in a defenseman, wouldn't you?
So you're thinking it's Lafreniere and Kako.
That's I don't know. I have no idea. This seems a lot. It seems far fetched, but
honestly, I know this
Kaprin
is flat
going out too. Like I know they traded Mark Stahl, but I think the Rangers would still need to relieve themselves with some cap room. I think.
I agree. They're trying to re-sign guys like Strome, and you know they're trying to they need cap room. You're right, and it would be easy if they could get rid of Henrik Lundqvist because there's 8.25 right there. But they're not going to be able to do it. He's got no move, and I don't think they're going to buy him out.
Does he really want to be that guy that just sits around all year?
He's going to be that guy.
He knows what he's doing, and it's uncomfortable. And you sign the contract, you have the right, but like, why do you want to be? I don't know why you would want to be. It would be so uncomfortable knowing, like, the career you had, and nobody even wants you there.
Well,
nobody.
He might be in that Matt Sundin, you know, area. Remember when near the end, wasn't it the Leafs fans kind of wanted Mats to
Move on and trade him for assets. Still love Sundin, but they were like, you're gonna bring back a first round pick at a minimum and draft picks, and they got to reload and rebuild.
Right, and to me that first round pick isn't gonna happen for Lundqvist. What
I don't
it
think
is,
anyone
is that,
wants him.
No, but
who's
that's
gonna
my
take
point.
Him at 8.25?
The cap relief is what you're looking for.
Of course. So who's, like, I guess maybe Detroit or something if you throw in multiple picks and prospects, but like
well,
who's going to
that?
Like, I know they did that for Stahl, exactly. I mean, at some point, and the problem is Lundqvist, because he has a no move, he's not going to Detroit. He's not going to some brutal team that knows that they're just taking him on because the Rangers are willing to pay, you know, excessive amounts of assets to get rid of them. So I think they're
can't
stuck.
They do to him with what just happened to Bobby Ryan?
Well, that's a buyout, but that's
can't they just do that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. The window's, I believe, open. I'd have to double.
I would do it. I mean, I would definitely do it if it was if that's what is going to allow me to acquire someone like Eichel or whoever it is. You know, I don't know who else they'd be in on. But if I were the Rangers, I would be all over Jack Eichel. I mean, they have done a lot of building here. I think they got a pretty good defense. They've got Panarin locked in. If you bring in a guy like Jack Eichel, man, you're ready to win something right now, you know, or close to it.
Well,
he's a great player, Bri, and I like him. I know Jamie's a big fan. He does a lot of Ottawa games, but like just to hear all the reports of Jack Eichel wants to make sure they're doing – like, he seems to have a lot of demands for a guy that's been around for, what, 4 or 5 years now, 3 or 4 years? It's just like, come on, dude. You're not McDavid. You're not Crosby. It's like this guy just seems to have – it just seems like he has a lot of demands for a guy that hasn't accomplished squat. Like, he hasn't won individual awards. He's just known as that good player in Buffalo. So it just seems like some of the demands are a little bit much. And, of course, you want to demand excellence at everybody. Your teammates, you want to have a good team. You want your management to be doing the right things. But it just seems like a lot. He demanded the $10 million a year contract. Does he deserve it? Who knows? But it just seems like a lot for me.
Well, I think he's an elite player. Like, probably, is he in your top 20? He is for me. Like, he's one of the best players in the league.
Yep.
And I think he's at a point where, again, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but it hasn't looked good on the surface for many years now.
It's pretty easy to realize that anyone would be furious with the Buffalo Sabres. You know, I think you could look at it both ways. I can see it both ways. You know, this Eichel, it seems like he was barking out demands and this, that, and the other.
You're right, Oh.
Pretty early into his career, and it's almost an annual event now every year.
What's
it's the
this
same
guy
thing.
Want now? And they've butchered it. There's no question.
But
Brian,
Buffalo's a joke. I can't sit here and defend the team. The team's an absolute disaster and has been since day one.
Well, if you're the team, wouldn't you go to the kid and say, "Look, where's your head at? Are you so fed up here that you want to go somewhere else?" And they might as well just move on from the guy and say, "This has been a gong show with you. We might as well move on with the gong show without you because you're the piece that can bring in the most pieces back. So we'll start all over again." And that would be dreadful. And I mean dreadful for a Sabres fan to hear. But that's where you got to go with Eichel. You go to him and say, where's your head at? Are you fed up with this nonsense? Because basically everyone else is. And it's been a gong show with them. So if you're going to move him, you might as well just have a gong show without him and start from scratch.
Well, I would caution against that. You never... We've
go ahead, but that's what I would do.
But yeah, but what I'm saying is you're never going to recover Jack Eichel. You're never going to get an elite top 20 player straight across. Like, who are you getting from the range?
Yeah, but if he's mentally checked out, you're never going to get 100% Jack Eichel in Buffalo anyway.
But I don't disagree that Kevin Adams probably went to him and said, hey, I'm running the show here. This is my plan. I want you to be a part of it. Where are you at? You know, I know you're frustrated. What would you like to see? Like, what are you seeing? What I, you know, take me in the dress room. Take me into what you're seeing. You take that into factor, but go, just keep in mind, we're paying you $10 million a year, and you're the captain of this ship. So you know, we want to get it righted with you involved, not with trading you away.
That's what they should be thinking. I mean, right. I don't think it's smart to just unload Eichel, but if he's going to demand out next
year anyway, that's a different thing. Yeah.
Maybe you jump the gun, and I don't know what the deal would be, but I would say maybe you can get a top 20 pick player if it is Lafreniere. You know, like if you get the first overall pick, which you'd have to demand. Like if you're trading with the Rangers, you'd have to demand the first overall
mandatory.
I think it's first and.
I agree with you.
I don't know Lafreniere, but like I would argue that Eichel's a better player.
Absolutely.
And I think Eichel will probably be a better player in his career.
And his cap hit, for what he is actually very good. Like he's got, six years left at 10. It's not an unbelievable deal, but it's not bad at all. And you're locked in, and he's a bona fide true number one center.
Centerman.
Plays with Panarin or plays on the other line, and you're dialed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like it would have to be something crazy.
Yeah, it would
Buffalo
be a boatload for sure.
To even think about that. Like
yes,
for
of
Buffalo
course.
And it would have to be multiple players and impact players. Like not just the first overall pick and all of that. Yeah, Lafreniere looks like he's going to be a really good player in
the
National
Hockey League. Be considered an impact player. You get a first overall pick. I mean that better be an impact player.
You know what?
It may not be day one.
I haven't seen Lafreniere play, and I'm not convinced he's McDavid.
He's not McDavid.
Or Matthews.
You don't have to be convinced he's not.
But he's not going to be Nail Yakupov either.
Exactly.
So even if he's somewhere in between, I still think Eichel's the better player.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, Noodles, but I'm saying if you get the first overall pick, that's not just a throw-in. Like that.
No, that's
a centerpiece, unbelievable move coming back. I would still want more, but a first overall pick, let's not pretend like that's, pick 28.
No, you're right.
I mean?
You're
getting a rock star. All right, Patrick Laine, his name's out there as well. We'll touch on that. Game 6 of the Cup Final tonight, Monday Nighter tonight, Kansas City at Baltimore. We'll touch on that as well. And the Jays get ready to perform in the playoffs tomorrow down in Tampa. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, so more updates coming in from Charlie Montoyo, who is on the record now saying Ryu did not ask for an extra day off. It's nothing physical.
Ooh.
And he just said that the team looks at every individual game as equal. All they have to do is win two of them. So,
did someone please tell me someone like this is not an organization? This is someone's idea. Whose idea was it? That's what I want to know.
Well, Montoyo. Well, no one's going to answer that. Montoyo's going to say.
Okay,
it was
but shouldn't that question be asked, Brian?
Yeah, I agree with you, but I can tell you what he's going to say. He's going to say, "I make the calls. I'm the manager. I'm speaking on behalf of the team." He's like a commissioner, right? Like, the owners are making the calls, and guess who has to go out and talk?
Then ultimately, he's saying that it was his decision then.
If he's
going to be the guy that claims he makes the calls, because that would be the only question I have at the presser. Whose idea was this? Because, people brainstorm. Someone has – whose idea was it? That's what I want to know.
Well –
because I personally hate it.
Yeah, again, it's unconventional. I mean, at the very least, they are looking at this in a very different view from – what any other team has really done historically in the history of baseball,
And I just got an answer from a Major League Baseball player. No good reason other than the fact that he is tired or sore and he needs another day. There's no good reason for
it. Okay. Well,
so
all right.
The Jays are claiming that that's not the case, but who knows? I mean, this team is not exactly the most transparent operation in the history of pro sports either. They don't really just come out there and just shoot from the hip, So who knows, but that's what we're dealing with. Shoemaker goes tomorrow. Ryu goes game two. If it gets to three, Walker on the mound. And the bullpen's going to be important. You know, it's playoff baseball. We know that. So we'll find out starting tomorrow. Game six of the Cup Final tonight. Monday night or tonight, Ravens minus 3.5. And that sounds about right to me. You know, I think Baltimore's going to win tonight. I think they might win big. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised because they need this more than Kansas City. Kansas City's won a Super Bowl. Kansas City's beaten Baltimore twice over the past couple of years. It's at home. Baltimore's been rolling through 2 weeks. Kansas City hasn't looked so great. I wouldn't be surprised if Jackson and the Ravens dial it up tonight.
Are you trying to convince me either way?
Well, here's the thing that I want to convince both of you is you're talking like this could be the most amazing game. You know what happens. All the hype, and then it's a dud.
I hope not, but it wouldn't be the first time
you when know what I mean?
You
it's
gather around the TV thinking, here we go, and it's just brutal.
Exactly.
17-7 tonight. You're like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, exactly. That worries me.
Yeah. But, no, this is in reverse psychology. I like Baltimore tonight. But, you're going to be on the clock later this afternoon. So you don't have to make a pick right now. You can stew on it, think about it.
Did I get my ass beat yesterday? Like,
You're in trouble, Beansy. You're not in a good place. I'll leave it at that. I don't need to get into it publicly.
Okay, then this is my last week. Karolnik and Al's brother and Keith, they're helping out. They're helping out with the picks because I can't do it. I can't bet on football. They can help me with the selections and make the picks.
Well,
I picked the wrong one.
We picked the winners yesterday. You picked Seattle. I just picked Buffalo and Green Bay. You know, so we all
by the way under protest.
The Green Bay
Donahue
one?
Donahue was reffing. Donahue was reffing.
Oh, Buffalo.
Buffalo. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Donahue also had the goofiest interception call of all time early
that
in the
was
game.
Redonk. Yeah. That was redonk.
And
that pass
Buffalo,
interference
but...
play just gave you. Give him the game.
All right, we'll
game.
Pick up on that in the next hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.